You know what?
Well,
Amy,
yes.
Do you want to bring in Dave Simons?
Oh my gosh, so excited to bring in Dave Simons.
I love talking to Dave Simons.
And our people, the people, love to hear him. Because after he was on last week, text line, love Dave.
And they are excited to hear that he wants to cap credit card interest rates. That it's his idea. And because of Dave Simons, you're no longer going to get gouged by the credit card companies. Dave is the managing director of One Private Wealth. What's going on?
You guys are making me blush. I mean, seriously. Well, all this loving out there. Thank you so much.
Well, we love you very much. The people love you. And
Love is over now.
And so the love is over. Now it's time to talk about credit card rates.
Get
back to business.
Okay, we joked at the end of the last hour that this was Bernie Sanders' idea to cap credit card interest rates, which is not a joke. It actually really was true, but this was something that Bernie Sanders likes. And Donald Trump has said that Americans are, quote, being ripped off by credit card companies, and that a 10% interest rate cap would ease affordability concerns. Well, I'll just throw it to you. What do you think of a 10% interest rate cap?
Well, I will give you my opinion on that, but let me back up just a second and say this. I do applaud the president for finally addressing some of the issues that are facing a large number of Americans. The economy is doing well by all measures. But we've talked about this before, but there is a growing swath of Americans who just are not feeling the loving out there. And it's been tough for them. And unfortunately, a lot of our politicians have been loath to really address that, including the president himself, who's even called some of these continued focus on inflation a Democratic hoax. So it's nice. I applaud the president to say, let's put everything on the table. Let's look at capping credit card interest. Let's look at maybe making it more difficult for some of these big institutions to buy individual homes. That's been put out there. This is great. Now, with that said, some of this stuff should be dismissed. It's easy, guys. It's really easy to say, yeah, this sounds like a good idea to cap for 1 year. That's just the plan. 1 year credit card interest at 10%. Be careful what you wish for, because on the surface, this sounds like a no-brainer. Well, why wouldn't you do that? With credit card companies, let me tell you something. They're not getting really rich on a lot of these interest charges. They make a ton of money on other things, their annual fees, late payment fees, these little monthly nuisance things, cash advance fees, transaction fees. Of course, every time you use a credit card, they're getting a little money on that. It's like those payday loan offices that you see that have also been a political hot potato that are charging 30 and 40% annual loans for overnight loans. They're not getting rich doing that because it's the risk that they take. There is so much default. And that's the same thing with credit card companies. The unintended consequence, in my opinion, is if you cap this at 10%, from what I can see in my research and reading some white papers of analysts who don't really have any skin in the game, you would actually start to see some losses being established at the credit card company level. They're not going to accept that. So they're going to start increasing those late payment fees, the annual fees. They're going to find a way to make up that revenue. And lastly on that, for the very people that we're trying to help, those who are really deep in debt and cannot pay those credit card payments on a monthly basis, the credit card companies would likely now start restricting their access completely. And I've even seen where they're going to start requiring, if this were to go through, let's say a FICO credit score of 720 and up. Well, now the people who really need this as a lifeline won't even have access to it. So I like the fact that we are discussing this. Things need to be done, but I don't think that this one is workable.
What could be done? Because it does seem like, and I think most credit cards, for the most part, the average credit card, it is something like 26 to 30% is the interest rate that they are charging, which is just
24% is the average.
It's 24 it is now. Okay, I mean, that's a crazy number.
Yeah, that's a great question, and honestly, it's a little bit above my pay grade, guys. I don't know. This is such a big societal issue, And this is a very, very important issue for me. In my weekly commentary that I sent out on Fridays, this is a common topic of for me. And I will show graphs and charts to say we cannot ignore this growing divide between the haves and have-nots, which is getting deeper and wider by the year. This has enormous societal and political and social and financial implications down the road that if we continue to ignore it, this country's going to have real, real problems. And we're starting to see a little bit of that. Never in my wildest dreams would a major city like New York elect an avowed socialist and people are happy about it. And they've just done the same thing in Seattle. So we can sit here and say, well, that'll never work and that's stupid. What are these people thinking? You get to the point where like, well, we've tried this. We've tried to do this. We've elected these people and it's not helping. So why not try it? Now, this is going to be a disaster, but at least I get the mindset. So this is where I do applaud the president to say, let's put everything out there. And I guess where I could get behind it is his whole thing is let's do it for 1 year. Maybe that could really help some people if it's 1 year. I would not sign off of it if this was a new law that would just take effect and always stay in place because I think that would actually hurt more consumers. But for 1 year, I'm okay with trying that.
So would that mean that it's for new purchases and not ones you've already made? Is that how that would work?
Yeah, they have not discussed that. Everything that I've been able to read that, this is just kind of floating the idea out there, and that has to be worked out. Now, I will say this. Honestly, I don't think this is going to happen the way that the president wants through executive action. From what I can tell legally, I don't think that you can go into private practice like this and force the credit card companies to do this outside of congressional action. So I think they'll have to do it a different way, but at least it's getting people to talk, and that's a start.
Yeah, it's interesting to see all the responses, whether you're reading the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the National Review, you know, to the Washington Post about this credit card cap. And a lot of discussion. The National Review has seemingly been all the articles I've read from them have been pretty much against it, basically saying, like what you talked about, that there are going to be unintended consequences and that credit card companies will find ways to protect themselves, saying, okay, well, we use high interest rate to protect ourselves from risky borrowers. So now if we have to cap it at 10%, well, maybe we'll only approve the most secure candidates, which means it's going to be way harder to get a credit card.
You know, it reminds me of like rent control, which sounds like, oh, that's a great thing, wouldn't it? I mean, inflation's going up and rents are going up. Let's just freeze this for a while. Well, it's never, ever worked. Because what happens is the landlords who cannot raise their rents, but their lives, everything around them are going up, costs, utilities, building materials, and all this, that they either go out of business or they start selling off properties. And now instead of increasing supply, you're actually limiting supply. And so you get the same thing with if you cap credit card interest rate, which sounds wonderful in theory, but in practicality, the very people that you're trying to help end up getting hurt because now they have no credit accessibility.
Talking with Dave Simons on KMOX, and we have seen a statement which was released yesterday with, and it was signed off on by all of the Fed chairs from the past who are alive still. You've got Treasury secretaries who have signed off on it, and it is a defense of Jerome Powell as he is being investigated by the Department of Justice. This doesn't seem like, to me, and you can, you know, educate us, I guess, it doesn't seem like this could have a good ending. Like it's most likely to be a bad ending if this really goes through.
You talk about a self-inflicted wound here. So I'll prove to be a little bit of an equal opportunity antagonist. I spent the first few minutes here applauding the president and saying, hey, this is great. Let's get everything on the table. You're finally recognizing that we need to help those who most need it in the economy. This is on the other side. This is just plain dumb. This was stupid. And to Jay Powell's credit, he has sat there and he has taken one arrow after another from the president, just really personal, invective, just playground, elementary school abuse of calling him names. And he has taken it and he's not really fought back. This was a bridge too far, because now you have criminal indictment where you're talking jail sentence here for the Fed chair. Are you this is crazy. So he did the right thing. He finally stepped out. He went public. He said he's not going to accept this. He's going to fight it. And everybody's been coming to not only his defense, but the Fed's independence defense. And that also comes from some high profile Republicans. Now, it's interesting. They're stepping away from it. The president says, well, I was never really informed of this. I'm sorry, I don't believe that. And you even have Attorney General Pam Bondi who's saying, well, they just wouldn't cooperate. And no, I never said indictment. So they are quickly backing away from this. But you talk about unintended consequences. I'm kind of laughing about this in a way. This Jay Powell's tenure, as you know, ends in May. He's definitely done. But he still can stay on as a Fed governor, which votes on interest rates for another couple of years until 28. Speculation was that he would go ahead and step away from that. But now he may stay on just so he can protect the independence of the Fed, because Trump has pushed him too far. There are two other voting members who have been siding with Powell, who are thinking about stepping off also in 26. They now have been publicly saying they may stay on just to defend the independence of the Fed against the president. So the unintended consequence here is, I want people in there who will lower interest rates down to 1%. Now it may be the opposite because he went too far.
You know, it's so interesting because we've talked a lot about the bloated and ever-expanding executive branch, which goes back multiple administrations, right, where you just want the executive branch to get things done, the pen and phone administrations. So we've looked at how that affects our, you know, rights as American citizens, or how it might affect war powers, or how it may or not make Congress seem less powerful. But I don't think we've talked too much about how the expanding executive branch has impacted the economy. Do you see that as a concern, that the executive branch, instead of just influencing the economy, might have way more direct impact than it ever has before?
100%, Amy. This has been very concerning to me. There should be the largest of all walls between the White House and the executive branch and the free market. There should be very little overplay. Yes, you have to have oversight, absolutely. But just to give you one example, I am not in favor of the government taking a stake in publicly traded companies like Intel. The government now owns 10%. The moral hazard there cannot be overstated, because now you're a competitor with Intel and you're thinking, what? The government now is actually working directly with another company that we go up against in the semiconductor and chip manufacturing industry. And so I have a real problem with that. And now it gets to these governmental agencies that are supposed to be separate from Congress and from the White House up to a point. I would venture to say this: of all the quasi-government agencies, the one that has long been considered the most independent, almost sacrosanct, that it cannot have any influence from the White House, is the Federal Reserve. Yes, there is oversight. Yes, the president ultimately selects the person that he would want as the Fed, and that has to be voted on by the Senate and all that. But outside of that, there should be very, very little influence. Never in my lifetime, if not the history of the country, have we ever seen this kind of public involvement of trying to sway the Fed in someone's own image. And it's nice to see. It's nice to see that while it's been bending, it is not breaking. And I don't think it will. I think the defense of the Fed's independence has really come through in the last 48 hours. And I'm glad to see many Republicans who have been afraid to speak out because of the wrath of the president are now doing just that and saying this is too far. And now, at least so far, the president hasn't taken to Truth Social to go after these Republicans. He's been mum, and that speaks volumes.
Dave Simons, we love talking to you. Thanks for being with us again on a Tuesday.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Amy. Have a great rest of your week.
Thank you.
Dave is a partner and managing director of One Private Wealth, and with us on Tuesdays.